A policeman one day got a call to move quickly to a bridge where there was a man on the edge, apparently preparing to commit suicide. The policeman rushed to the scene and saw the man standing there and said, sir, please don't do this. The man said, no, you don't understand. Life is not worth living, and I don't want to live anymore. The policeman had to think quickly what to come up with to try to keep this guy from jumping, because he knew if he kind of went too fast, the guy might go ahead and leap. And so he said, Mr., just a moment. Give me 3 minutes, just 3 minutes to tell you why life is worth living. And then I'll let you tell me why it's not. But if you still want to jump after my 3 minutes and your 3 minutes, I won't stop you. He was trying to come up with a delay tactic to keep him from jumping. The policeman started and he said, listen, your family, your children, your future, your potential. He went into everything he could think of to try to keep this man from jumping. After he finished his 3 minutes, he let the man speak. The man said, no, you don't understand. I lost my job. My friends have forsaken me. My children disrespect me. He went on and on and on and on about all that life had robbed him of. The policeman, after he had finished his 3 minutes, reached out his hand and offered the man his hand. The man slowly reached back and put his hand in the policeman's hand, and they both jumped. Because hopelessness has a way of spreading. There are many people today who are living with a sense of hopelessness, a sense that it's not working, it's not worth it, it's not fair, I quit, I give in, I throw in the towel, I can't take it anymore. A sense of profound despair. That was true of the folks that the author of Hebrews was writing. They were on the verge of quitting. Quitting the faith, going back to the world. They didn't think this Christian thing was worth it. It just wasn't working out for them. A lot of reasons for that. I've got unanswered prayers. I've got unfulfilled dreams. Things in my life that I thought God was going to take care of has not yet been addressed. So I'm ready to throw in the towel. That leads him to discuss an awesome concept in a profound chapter. What leads him to discuss this concept is summarized in chapter 10, beginning with verse 35. In chapter 10 of Hebrews, verse 35, he says, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need for endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. For yet in a little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. He says, I am writing you so that you don't throw in the towel for endurance. And then he throws the zinger, for the righteous shall live by faith. Okay, watch this. Whatever faith is, we're going to talk about it in a moment, it's supposed to be a lifestyle, not an event. The righteous shall live by faith. In other words, whatever faith is how you should roll. It should be how you flow. It should be your normal modus operandi of life. Faith is not a concept you visit. It's a lifestyle you possess. Because the righteous shall live by faith. So If you're not living by faith, it's because you're not yet righteous. Because that's how the righteous live. And the righteous who learn to live by whatever faith is get to experience God in action. That's what he says. You get to experience God fulfilling his word. So you've got to ask the question, am I living by faith? Because if I'm not rolling by faith, then I'm not experiencing God in my circumstances. Because that's how the righteous roll. They live by faith. But that raises a question. What is faith and how does it work? Which leads us to our series, a tour of the Hall of Faith, where we're going to look at the heroes of the faith. Verse 1. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. I read that again. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. In order for faith to be faith, as God defines faith, it must have substance. Faith involves things. It involves stuff. Faith is not a willy-nilly amorphous concept in the never-never land. It is being sure of stuff, of the things, which are hoped for, and it has evidence of things you have not yet seen. He summarizes that concept in the word hope. Faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Faith deals with things that are real that have not yet penetrated your five senses because you haven't seen it yet. Hope is an expectation about the future. Hope is an expectation of which you are convinced of or convicted about. In other words, you are confident of this thing, even though the thing hasn't occurred yet. Faith then must have substance. It must have some stuff that you can rely on. Now, what this means is, faith is only as meaningful as the substance to which it is attached. If you've got faith in bad substance, then your faith will be insufficient no matter how much of it you possess, because the substance you're placing it in isn't much. Or maybe not real at all. If your child, when they lose a tooth, is placing faith in the tooth fairy to put some money under their pillow, I hate to ruin this, but they're placing faith in a non-existent reality. It would be better for them to place faith in mama or daddy, because that's substance. The tooth fairy is not. So if they place faith in the tooth fairy and nothing happens with mother and father, they will be disappointed in their faith because there will be no substance for which to draw it from. Faith has to do with an expectation in a hope that must involve a substance. So the amount of your faith is not tied to how much faith you have. It's tied to how much substance you possess. A little faith in significant substance produces great results. A lot of faith in insufficient substance will produce no results. Because what makes faith faith is the substance to which it is attached. Faith is the assurance of the things, the substance hoped for, and it is the evidence of something that your eyes have not yet laid eyes on, but that you know is real. If you want to grow your faith, don't go faith growth hunting. get a better substance. The surer the substance, the more solid the faith. Perhaps you remember me telling you some years ago, I was to fly to Iowa to speak, and they couldn't get me there by the airlines, so they sent a twin-engine plane down to Redbird Airport, then now Executive Airport, to fly me in this twin-engine plane to Iowa. Originally, Sister Evans was supposed to go. Until she discovered they were gonna pick me up in a twin-engine plane. She said, "You are going by yourself." I said, "You don't have faith." She said, "That's because you don't have much plane." The schedule got changed around and we wound up being able to fly Delta. She said, "I'm going." I said, "Your faith grew." She said, "That's because your plane grew." So the size of her faith was directly related to the size of the plane. Because faith is related to the substance of which it is attached. There are some people in your life who you do not believe. If they tell you something, you're not going to do much with it, because the substance that it came from is not worth your confidence. There are other people in your life, you'll do whatever they say, because the person that it is coming from is worthy for you to believe what they said. So to understand faith, you have to look at the substance of things hoped for, that is what the object is, and the evidence of things not seen. So this, let me clarify something then about what faith is not. Faith is not how you feel. Faith is not, let me put in a word, necessarily how you feel. You can feel faithless, but be full of faith. You can feel full of faith and have no faith. Because faith is not, first and foremost, an emotion. Emotions do not have intellect. Emotions don't think. That's what emotions are. It's how you feel. And feelings shift based on the information received. If you came in here depressed because of your bills, and I wrote you a legitimate check for $100,000, how you feel will immediately change. So now you can go back to how you were feeling when you first walked in here. But that's. But how you feel will change because of the information you received. See, the content will affect your feelings. If you go to a scary movie with a monster in it, and with all the technology today, they can make stuff seem so real, you might cover your eyes or screech or go, ah! You might react to something you know's not real. You know the monster's not real. You know it's not coming through the screen. You know that nothing's gonna bite you when you go home. You might get home and put the covers over your head about something that's not even real, but you treat it like it's real, even though the substance is not real, because the emotions have become the dictator. Emotions are real, but they're the caboose, not the engine. They're at the back of the train, not the front of the train. They're like cargo in the back of a truck that keeps shifting. You do not let shifting cargo guide the truck. You let the steering wheel guide the truck. And even though they're shifting in the cargo doesn't say where the truck is going. Faith is tied to substance that is not yet seen or experienced with the five senses, but that you are convinced is real based on the integrity of the subject who is calling for the faith. Who is the subject calling for the faith? It's God. He says, after you've done the will of God. Now, let me tell you why this sermon and this series, for many, may be the most important one you've ever heard, because Hebrews 11 verse 6 says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. Don't miss this one. Faith is not one of the things you need. It is the key thing you need if you want to experience God. Because without it, it says you are displeasing to God. So all of us here today who don't roll by faith, we ain't talking about visiting faith on occasion, where faith is not your modus operandi and lifestyle, that's not how you normally flow, are living a life displeasing to God. So if you're not living by faith, you're not pleasing God. If you're not pleasing Him, you're displeasing Him. Why is God getting all upset about whether I have faith or not? Because when you don't exercise faith, you are challenging God's integrity. Let me put it in everyday language. To not live by faith is to call God a liar. Every time we leave faith, we say, God, you don't know what you're talking about. You are in error. In fact, you are a downright liar. Now, while nobody here would come out and just verbally say, God, you are a bold-faced liar. When God says something and you don't operate on it by faith, He says, you just call me, you challenge my integrity. Now, how do you feel when you know you told the truth and somebody tells you, you lying? That means they've displeased you because they have insulted your integrity. We have Christians who live a lifestyle of insulting God's integrity because they don't live by faith. Every day they get up, they go, God, you're a liar. You're a liar in the morning. You're a liar at noontime. You're a liar when the sun goes down. You're a liar all day long. Why? Because I choose not to live by faith because I don't believe that you are a person of integrity. Therefore, I'm going to take care of this mama myself. Without faith, you have challenged the integrity of God. Now you know why faith is a big deal and why God says without it, you do not please me. You displease me because you challenge my integrity. If you want to make concrete, you go get a bag of cement. You mix the bag of cement with water, then you pour it in, it settles and becomes concrete. For many of us, God is not yet concrete. He's not a solid reality in our lives, He's merely a concept in our minds. That's because we have cement that hadn't gotten mixed, so that it gets hard and becomes experiential concrete. In my experience of God. In other words, for many of us, who God is and what God says is an idea in our mind that has not yet graduated to be concrete in our lives because it hadn't gotten mixed yet. So let me give you or remind you again of the formal definition of faith. Boiling it all down, faith is simply acting like God is telling the truth. Faith is acting like God. It's not feeling that God is telling the truth. It's not saying that God is telling the truth. Faith is acting like God is telling the truth. That's why the Bible calls it walking by faith and not talking by faith or feeling by faith or even thinking by faith. Unless it has hit your feet, it's not faith. It's intellectual assent to a concept that hasn't gotten mixed with action, therefore nothing concrete has shown up in the life. If you want a concrete manifestation of God, then what you believe about God must be married to what you do in light of that belief. Now you're exercising faith so that God can now become concrete in your life and not a theory in your head. As I've said before, in the rooms around the sanctuary, we've had to install motion detector lighting because people were leaving lights on. It was costing us too much electricity bills, and so we had to do something. So we installed motion detector lighting. You walk in the room, the light pops on. You walk out of the room, the light goes off, so that we're not wasting electricity with folk leaving lights on. You walk in, the light comes on. You walk out, the light goes off. There's power in the room. There's lighting in the room. But it will not manifest itself until it detects movement. If there is no movement, that doesn't mean there's no power. That doesn't mean there's no light. That means that you haven't given it any motion. You haven't triggered it. God is real. God has power. God makes promises. But you won't see it until he sees motion. If there is no motion, it lies dormant, although it's really there. Faith is acting like it is so, even when it's not so, in order that it might be so, simply because God said so. It's acting like it is so, even when it's not so, in order that it might be so, merely because God said so. So now that we have this understanding of faith, that it is not some amorphous thing, I believe for every drop of rain that falls, the flower grows, or whatever the song says. Just believe for belief's sake. The issue of faith is, does God have integrity? And of course, Hebrews says, by two immutable things, it is impossible for God to lie. Okay? But if you want it to be concrete and not just cement in a bag, it must be mixed with motion. And it is to be applied to every category of your life, your personal life, your marriage, your relationships, how you do at work, how you handle your money, what it means to be a wife, what it means to be a husband. I mean, it is to apply faith to every category of life where you are moving in sync with what he says. Verse 2. For by it, by faith, the men of old gained approval. For by it, by this definition of faith, the men of old gained approval. He says, I'm going to take you on a tour of the men of old. Men, and he's going to have, that means men and women, because he has men and women in chapter 11, of old, meaning in the Old Testament. He says, I'm going to take you New Testament Christians on a tour, and we're going to walk through what I call the Hall of Faith, the heroes of faith. And he says, I'm going to take you on a tour of them so they can help you. Those of you who grew up in the old church, remember when the preacher would come up and say, can I get a witness? Yeah, I told you. Can I get a witness? In other words, is there anybody here who can testify about what I said and know that I'm telling the truth? Okay, are there any testimonies in the house? That's what the preacher was asking when he said, can I get a witness? Okay. He makes a statement in verse 1 about what faith is, and then he asks, are there any witnesses? He reaches back into the Old Testament and he pulls out witnesses from the Old Testament for us New Testament Christians to know that what worked for them is what you need to work for you. He's got some witnesses. So when we go through this Hall of Faith, we're gonna look at some witnesses, because Abel's going to come forth and he's going to be the first witness. Enoch is going to come forth and he's going to testify. Noah's going to come forth and he's going to say a little something, something. Abraham's going to come forth and he's going to tell you something. Sarah's going to come forth and a girlfriend has something she wants to share with you. Rahab want to tell you a little something, something, because she's going to testify as well. David's going to give a testimony. Joseph's going to give a testimony. The patriarch's going to give a testimony. There's going to be testifying to let you know that verse 1 is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God when you understand faith. He says, I got some testifying to do. In Canton, Ohio, they have the Football Hall of Fame. These are where the football greats, those who exceeded and excelled, their busts are there, and for them to be remembered. God says, this is my hall of faith. This is my Canton, Ohio. Hebrews chapter 11. These are the men and women who demonstrate that this faith thing works. You know, in boxing, when they have the heavyweight champion and champion fight, and they got the two challenges or the two boxes on in, they bring in the heavyweight champions of old and introduce them to the crowd. Ladies and gentlemen, Muhammad Ali, when Smokin' Joe Frazier was alive, ladies and gentlemen, Smokin' Joe Frazier, they bring in the heavyweight champions, people clap. The people clap, and then the champion will go over and shake one guy's hand, and he'll go shake the other guy's hand. He'll wave to the crowd that's applauding him. The reason why they bring the ex-champions back was to let these who are in the battle right now know. Somebody else has been in this ring before. Somebody else has gotten punched on before. Somebody else has gotten knocked down before. Somebody else has gotten bruised before. But I'm here to testify, even though it's a fight, and even though it's a battle, you can come out this thing a winner. They're there to let you know you can win in spite of the fight. Some folk came in here today beaten up by life, bruised by circumstances, and defeated by sin. But this story wants to testify to you that even though you've been beat up and even though you're in a fight, this is a winnable battle because I got some testimonies. I got some witnesses that will testify this is a battle that can be won. He said, by it, the saints of old were approved. That means validated and vindicated. There's nothing like when God validates you. The end of chapter 10 says, and he will come. He's going to validate you. You don't get your graduation certificate when you enroll in college. You don't get it upon enrollment. You get it upon fulfilling the requirements. That's why the end of chapter 10 says, and when you have completed the will of God. See, because some of us are in college for 20 years because we've not completed the course we've been called on. So we've not received the approval of graduation, the validation and vindication of a life of faith. We pick and choose when we want to believe God. We believe God on the things we like. We disregard him on the things we don't like. And so we're not living by faith. We are cherry picking by faith. He says, the righteous, this is how they roll. In other words, non-faith is the exception. Faith is the rule in spite of how they feel. It's like the three Hebrew boys that said, we believe God can deliver us. But even if we don't, we're not going to bow because we trust God. It's like Habakkuk says in Habakkuk chapter 3 in the last few verses, though there's no fig on the tree. Though there is no cattle in the stall, though I can't see anything God is doing, I'm going to still rejoice because I still know God, even though I can't see a change in my situation, because God has integrity in spite of my circumstances. I mean, to think about us living our lives calling God a liar every day because of our refusal to live by faith. And faith is confidence in something you do not see yet in the visible realm, but you're convinced of it spiritually. You're convinced of it spiritually, although it hasn't been seen physically yet. So you're walking in expectation. One other thing before we go on to our final point. There's some strange people in this list in Hebrews 11. There's some folk in this list that if we were making the list, wouldn't have made the list. You got a prostitute in this list. You got a liar in this list. You got a murderer in this list. You got a passive man in this list. You got a lady who laughed in the face of God in this list. You got some messed up people who made the list. Oh, that ought to be some good news to somebody. Even though you walk through this door, toe up from the flow up, even though you walk through this door, a spiritual failure, if you right now will begin to live by faith, God still will let you make a list. And some folks shouldn't belong here. That means there's hope. If you and I begin to live by faith and stop faking it to make it, playing church, playing religion, playing Christianity, and not taking God seriously and stopping our challenge of his integrity, because why would you answer the prayer of somebody who calls you a liar every day? You lying, God, but bless me. You a liar, God, but give me a better job. You a liar, God, but give me a mate. You a liar, God, but change my circumstance. You a liar, God, but heal me. When God's integrity is challenged, his promises lie dormant and unfulfilled. He comes to his final point. It's a zinger too. Verse 3. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was made out of things which are visible. I need to read that again because this is a zinger. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen, what is visible, was not made out of things which are visible. He said, to make my point about faith, let me take you all the way back to the beginning. He says, we understand that the worlds that we do see was created by someone using something we don't see. Genesis 1:1 says, in the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. That's the Hebrew name for the creator God, found in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. Stay with me here. It says the worlds, and notice the word worlds in verse 3 is plural. That means the whole universe, not just the earth. So the whole universe, all the galaxies that exist, was created by someone you can't see, using stuff you can't see, to create a universe you can see that we're still trying to look at through telescopes, but there are too many galaxies that even our strongest telescopes can't even locate them. So if you believe in God, and you believe God created the heavens and earth, you're believing somebody you can't see, using stuff you can't see, created something you can see. What is faith? Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So God has operated this way from the beginning of bringing stuff you can see out of stuff you can't see, and he created a whole universe with this strategy. Now, what did you tell me your problem was? God used this strategy to create the universe. And how did he do it? Verse 3 says, by a rhema word. The word there is rhema. A rhema word means a divine utterance, a spoken word. He spoke it. You remember Genesis 1, in the beginning God said, let there be light, and there was light. God said, let the water be separated from the land, and it was so. God said, he uttered a word, and what wasn't became because of what was uttered. Somebody who you don't see said something. And the somebody you can't see, because we can't see God, who said something, something you can see happens. That's why the centurion told Jesus, all you gotta do is speak the word. You gotta utter the word, and this thing I'm dealing with will change. Stay tuned here. We live in a world where we've been duped. Did you know you have to believe in evolution, you gotta go to college first? To believe that the world came from this primeval slime that grew into an amoeba, that grew into a monkey, that developed self-consciousness and became a man. You gotta go to college for that. That's where you gotta go. Faith people understand that God spoke the divine fiat, the divine utterance, and these things came into existence. But modern man has duped a whole generation. And so we have a generation that does not see God move. Because we've been duped by education. We've educated ourselves into becoming fools. We've been duped by philosophy. All philosophy is are men doodling with ideas. I mean, Immanuel Kant says, I think, therefore I am. Oh, shut up. People sitting in philosophy go, that's deep. Immanuel Kant said, I think, therefore I am. That's deep. People be getting degrees in ignorance. We've been duped by science. Science. Because most of science is trying to spend its time trying to prove there is no God. Okay? That kind of science. Trying to prove there's no God. And so all science is repetition of repeatable events from which they draw a hypothesis. Science is the recognition of repeatable events from which they draw an hypothesis, which often changes when new information is introduced to the equation. That's why food science will tell you one day you shouldn't drink coffee. Tell you, well, you can drink coffee. Well, you can't eat wheat, but you can't eat wheat. But you can't eat this kind of wheat, so now everything is gluten-free. And so science keeps shifting and turning and twisting. And don't know what to do. I'm so confused. We've been duped. We've let the mind of man cancel out the divine utterance of God, leaving us without his promise being fulfilled and his reality being experienced in our lives. Since God is the same yesterday, today, and forever, he still operates on the faith principle that what you see comes from what you don't see. So if you don't start with what you don't see, faith in what God says you can see, things you won't see, you'll just discuss it in science class. Okay, I notice nobody's sitting over here. Nobody's sitting top there. So there's spaces here that in the second service would normally be people in them or in most of them. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why they're empty spaces. Because inquiring minds want to know. Why are there empty spaces? Let me tell you why. Because a lot of our folks listened to the weatherman last night. The weatherman said, beginning at noon or so, the temperature's going to drop, precipitation will come in, it will get below freezing, it's going to ice. Be careful. For which they said, perfect. The weatherman uttered a word. The weatherman, the meteorologist said, it's going to be tough going early afternoon in Dallas, Texas, and they believed the word. You see where I'm going? Because they believed the word, they acted on the word that they believed, and therefore they decided to worship at Bedside Baptist and Mattress Methodist. They decided to worship at home, and they decided to do it because they believed the word. Now, all of us who listen to the weather know that the weathermen are often wrong. They say it's going to rain, but it doesn't rain. They say it's going to be cold, but it's nicer than the temperature they predicted. So they're sometimes hot and sometimes cold, no pun intended. The weatherman is sometimes right and sometimes wrong, but we tune in nightly to their word because their word will determine, do we take an umbrella? Do we not take an umbrella? Do we pick up a coat or do we not pick up a coat? Do I need a jacket or do I not need a jacket? Do I need a rain hat? Do I not take a rain hat? And we make those decisions on the word of a man who sometimes is right and sometimes is wrong, but we trust his word. If you can believe the word of a weatherman who's up today and down tomorrow, what about a God who's never wrong, never lied, never made a mistake? We act on the word. We don't say because it's going to be icing outside and he says it's cold, let me go on with a t-shirt, because we heard the word. We haven't seen the weather yet, but we act on it based on the word. You go to your doctor, he writes you a prescription. And if you can read the prescription, he's not a real doctor. Because real doctors can't write. A prescription you don't understand from a man you trust. See, that's the difference. Some people read the Bible and say, I don't understand it. The question is, do you trust the author? Even though I don't understand it, do I trust it? And even if I can read it, I don't know what it means. Some people read the Bible. I don't understand it. I don't know what it means, but I know who wrote it. And because I believe the one who wrote it has integrity, I'm going to take it to the pharmacy. I'm going to get it fulfilled. But faith has not occurred simply by picking up what was written from a person of integrity, getting what he provides. Faith has not been exercised until you take the medicine. Until you act on the prescription, all it is writing on a piece of paper by a person who has integrity that is of absolutely no benefit to you. The question you have to ask with faith is, does God have integrity? And if he does, will I align what he tells me to do in every area of life, not just in church life, not just in quote unquote the religious life, but every aspect of life, my career, my money, my relationships, my singlehood, my this, my that. Does God have integrity on every subject? You say, but I don't see it. And you won't until he sees you moving in faith. But normally sitting right there is my grandson, the littlest grandson, J2. We call him J2, Jonathan II. After the second service on most Sundays, Jonathan II runs out at the end of the service, runs up the step, comes over to the edge and says, Poppy, which is what he calls me, catch me. And he stands up here, and I hold my hands out, and he jumps. I did this with the other grandkids, too, when they were that small. They come up here and jump. So he comes up here almost every Sunday. He runs up here, and he says, Poppy, catch me. And so I hold out my hands, and he jumps. But it always wasn't like that. Let me rewind. Initially, I picked him up and put him up here. And I stood down there and I said, J2, jump. He said, no, I'm scared. I said, J2, I got you. He said, no. I said, J2, but I'm right here. I got you. He couldn't say it like this, but he was basically saying, I'm scared. No. But I kept uttering the word. Uttering the word. Uttering the word. The problem is he wasn't believing the word because he was not confident in my integrity. He was not convinced I either had the will or the ability to catch him and that I would let him fall. But after pounding him with the word, over and over, J2 jump, pounding him with the word. He came over to the edge. I said, jump, J2. He said, come closer. You're too far. You're too far. But when he asked me to draw near, when he called on me to draw near, I came a little bit closer and I drew a little bit nearer, because I knew the closer I got, the more confident he would have. And so I said, J2, jump. He lifted up one leg but kept the other leg down. He wasn't fully comfortable. And so he didn't jump. He just kind of tippily leaned forward so that I could grab him. I put him back up there. I said, J2, jump. This time he went up a little higher. J2, jump. He went even higher. Now at the end of the church, he runs out here and says, catch me. I'm jumping. Sometime he jumped before I even put out my hand, because he's learned to believe in my integrity. He believes that Poppy is not going to drop him, is not going to let him down, is not going to fall on his face. And once he becomes convinced that he can trust me, he now invites the opportunity to have faith. God wants you to trust his integrity so you can say to him, catch me in this situation. Catch me in this circumstance, because I have learned to trust you. I have learned that my God has integrity.